Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
There was a lot of speculation flying around social media yesterday when the president announced in advance that he was going to do a big presidential pardon today. And it turned out the person that he pardoned has been dead for a long time, a significant person for several reasons, Susan B. Anthony. Who was she? And can the abortion rights wing in our political landscape claim her as their own? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about two issues, the posthumous pardon of Susan B. Anthony and the selection of Kamala Harris as the Democratic vice presidential candidate. Joining us to do so, Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Marjorie, welcome back.
Todd, it's great to be with you again.
What was your reaction when you heard that the president was going to pardon Susan B. Anthony?
Well, it's kind of amazing. I was standing right behind him. And he introduced me at this press conference because I was there with the Women's Centennial Commission to celebrate the 100th anniversary of suffrage. And he turned to me during the introduction and said, in 7 minutes, you're going to be really surprised and excited. And he's right. I did not know that he was going to do this ahead of time. And then he made that announcement. And it really was such a poignant moment. And it's poignant not just because it's cool, not because it's just historical, because it marks the women's suffrage, which we've all taken for granted. But it points to something really important about human rights, in my opinion, how all rights are connected. The pro-life movement has a lot to thank Susan B. Anthony for. That's why the Susan B. Anthony List is named for her. And it's also really points back to this president's commitment to life, which is he has made at the very center of his leadership. So it was a really amazing thing. And it also makes, you know, it really for the nation allows people to kind of look back at her and see who she was, and points to when you are smack up against a human rights violation, do you obey the law or do you not?
So tell us the story of Susan B. Anthony and how she came to be in need of a presidential pardon.
Well, it's really cool. It was the election of 1872. Voting as a woman was illegal in Rochester, New York. She decided to go to the postmaster, and that's where he voted then, and vote. And she was arrested. She was slapped with a $100 fine. She said that she would not pay a penny to support such an injustice, and she never did. And then she even went to court. She gave a lecture at the court hearing about how unjust the whole thing was. The judge could never keep her from stopping talking. One thing she did was talk about the connection of all rights and how this is so fundamental. So it really is such a fundamental thing. And so to pardon her is, I think, a symbol of equal justice under law, like what we should all be for, what this president is for, and why this is such a really great surprise and such an important thing to do, especially right before an election.
People assume that the suffragettes were, in essence, kind of the first feminists, and that may be true to one degree or another, but they make the leap to believing that the suffragettes held the modern feminist views on things like abortion, and assume that these women were, because they were for women's rights, they must have been for what they call reproductive freedom. Where did Susan B. Anthony and many of the other suffragettes stand on that?
Yeah, you know, I really believe that the Susan B. Anthony List, which I lead, and what we do is bringing us back to the original roots of what feminism meant and what Susan B. Anthony and her whole cohort meant when they were fighting for women's rights then. And they always believed that you could, well, put it in a negative way, you could never build rights on the broken rights of other people, that all rights were connected. It's kind of connected to what people talk about now. The left talks about intersectionalism, that all rights are connected. And, you know, and to an extent, they take it in a different direction, but they're right. Everyone has basic human rights, and they all have to be affirmed. So Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Victoria Woodhull, Elizabeth Blackwell, all the original suffragists and really successful women early on in this movement were very pro-life. Now, that wasn't a word then, but they talked about it in really strong terms, that to will away the life of the infant, which is what was happening there, and the death of the child undermined the rights of the woman. Alice Paul, the original author of the Equal Rights Amendment, called abortion the ultimate exploitation of women. In Susan B. Anthony's newspaper, she said, the act will burden a woman's conscience and life, will burden her soul in the grave, but thrice guilty is the one that drove her to the dreadful deed. It will burn her conscience and life and her soul in the grave. This is deep. This is not just some sort of policy issue. So they have a lot to teach us. And so her pardoning brings back those lessons, those conversations that she and the original suffragists had, especially should bring it back to the people who call themselves feminists now, that it should be a wider berth than it currently contains.
Are you surprised that with all the coverage being made of this pardon on the part of President Trump, and kind of the reminiscing about Susan B. Anthony, that often her pro-life views, very strong pro-life views, and that of the other suffragists is not making the cut in the coverage?
You know, because we started this 25 years ago, we've been battling this battle with historians for quite a while. But the funny thing is, they don't really battle very hard. That is really true. I mean, if it were truly a battle that had reached a pitch, we would have heard about it. They know that they know, meaning the liberal historians and people teaching in universities, some people who have written Susan B. Anthony's own history and biography, they know that they held very strong pro-life views. They don't even argue against that anymore. They just say, well, you know, they didn't fight to outlaw it. Well, it was not even a question of it being outlaw then. It was universally considered not wrong then, so there was no question of it. But if Susan B. Anthony ever thought that abortion or the right, so-called right to abortion, were in any way getting in the way of women being liberated, and she thought that it was not a big deal, she would have fought for it tooth and nail. She was afraid of nothing. Look at what she did. She thought that voting illegally was a great way of shaking things up. If she thought that it was what current feminists think it is, she would have made it a big, big deal. And she didn't think that, and neither did any of those contemporaries. I think one of the most beautiful women in relatively modern history that has been around is Mildred Jefferson, who was the first Black woman to graduate from Harvard Medical School. And she was the chairwoman of National Right to Life for many years. And she saw the across-the-board connection of rights of all people who were suffering. And she was the chairman of National Right to Life because she thought that was the most fundamental. And, of course, it is.
So why was the vote so important to women like Susan B. Anthony and couldn't be disconnected from her holistic view of human rights?
Well, she was a Quaker. She was actually a temperance worker, which not everybody agrees with. But all of the fundamentals were there in her heart. She was first an abolitionist, fighting slavery and trying to get equal rights for slaves in America. And then the next thing that she went on to was the vote. She saw that connection between all those fundamental human rights. And she also saw that there were some grave injustices for women at the time. Custody battles over, like if the husband, you know, had an affair and left the family, and caused a divorce, that she would have no custody over the children or have any right to finances. And those are just kind of the tip of the iceberg. But there was so much that we take for granted now that we think that is just now under the law. But I think that why she's most compelling is because she saw all those human rights battles, or she was encapsulated in one human being, all those human rights battles encapsulated in her, in her work and in her heart and what she expressed. One of the things that I love is that her newspaper called The Revolution, the masthead, said, men's rights, nothing more. Women's rights, nothing less. She didn't see it as a zero-sum game, that there's like a limited pool of rights. She saw that all rights flourishing was good for all of humanity. And that's how the pro-life movement is. It's why I believe this president is especially compelling in places where people still believe in the fundamental human rights that are enshrined in the Constitution. And that's actually most of America, and definitely in battleground states.
You also wanted to spend a few minutes reacting to the selection of Kamala Harris as the Democratic vice presidential candidate. What were your thoughts?
My thought is that she, given everything that we've just been talking about, is the opposite of what the model of the suffragist woman fighting and battling for human rights is. She sees rights as a shrinking pie. For instance, when she was interviewing one particular judge in his confirmation battle to be a federal judge, she literally told him that being a practicing Christian disqualified him from having judgment that would allow him to be on the court. That being a Catholic or a member of the Knights of Columbus, which is basically a fraternal Catholic organization, and being pro-life disqualified him from being on the federal bench. That is called a religious test in our country, and that is who Kamala Harris is. And there is no light, there can be no light between the vice president and the president on the ticket running for president. And so there could not be a worse person, and combined there could not be a worse ticket in the nation ever, especially at this particular time when it's a time of choosing between whether the court's going to be a pro-life one or not.
So what do you think Susan B. Anthony would make of the fact that a candidate for vice president, woman candidate for vice president, essentially argues for abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy?
Her head would be spinning. Her heart would be revolting. She would be happy to see that there's, like, Victoria Woodhull, who was very pro-life, who was the first presidential candidate that was a woman long ago. She'd be happy to see that a woman, per se, was running. But I think she would say and believe what I do, which is what you want, is you want not just a woman, but a woman who enshrines in her heart values that are humane and human values, that it's not just a woman. Yes, every woman should have a right to express her views, but that women with truly liberating and the truly human sense values, they're the women that we need to be elevating, and it would not be Kamala Harris.
What would you say to listeners who think that it would be great to have a female vice president one heartbeat away from the presidency?
It would be a great thing to have a vice president that is a woman. It would be a fantastic thing. And there should be a qualifying round to make sure that that woman is somebody who affirms the values that are enshrined in our founding documents, that she stands by those things. That there are so many women like that. In fact, there are more the typical women in America than is communicated, I think, by the number of women that are speaking out right now, especially in the Democratic Party. Kamala Harris doesn't express that. So I think there's a great role for women that are in the majority right now, and those are the women who are expressing beautiful Christian and American values that enshrine life in our Constitution.
Female voters may well determine the outcome of the presidential election in November. What do you want to say to them?
I think the most important thing for women voters moving into this election is make sure that you understand the actual policy positions that are represented by each ticket. And make sure that you're not making a decision about personality, but about policy positions, where you think your views about the Constitution and policies in America point to. If you think that abortion up until birth is an okay thing, then go ahead and vote for the Biden-Harris ticket. That is in the minority, but if that's your view, then I would love to argue with you, but go ahead and do it. If you think that anything else beyond that is acceptable, that the least we get to a view on life and death that is humane and rooted in the Constitution, think about the policy predictions and policy statements of the Trump-Pence administration. And there can be no issue more important than those fundamentals about life. Really look at those policy predictions and policy commitments and separate that out from the other things. Because, I mean, I think you know, like you've seen this, that presidents will pass. We'll all pass. We'll all be history, all of us, in just a few decades. But what will be lasting will be what we have done to either preserve or not preserve the fundamentals of our founding documents. That's what needs to be in play.
Marjorie Dannenfelser is president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Learn more about the Susan B. Anthony List at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Marjorie, thank you very much.
Thank you for the blessing of being on with you.
When we come back, Dr. John Pless joins us. We're going to get a Lutheran perspective on the pandemic. We'll be talking about how it is if you're not able to go to church, you still have some resource at your fingertips, the Word of God. Stay tuned. Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $350,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Concordia University Chicago is committed to keeping college affordable for all, and especially for LCMS Lutherans. We have scholarships available specifically for students who are LCMS members. This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, asking you to encourage your student to check out Concordia Chicago at cuchicago.edu. And if you are interested in supporting these scholarships, please find us online at foundation@cuchicago.edu.